And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
The living brain.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara Counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is, what's really going on inside? Each of my guests is giving us a glimpse into the inner workings of his or her subject, whether it's internet marketing, America's vision of the future, or the Church of Scientology. My next guest is a contributing editor for Rolling Stone magazine. She's turned her investigative power on the world's most secretive church, the Church of Scientology. She'll describe the inner workings of Scientology from her book titled Inside Scientology, The Story of America's Most Secretive Religion. And if you want to join in the conversation or if you want to ask a question, you can always call us at 639-0008. Janet Reitman is a contributing editor at Rolling Stone, as I said. She's also the author of Inside Scientology, which was based on her National Magazine Award-nominated story of the same name. She's the first American journalist to publish a major book on Scientology and the only writer to have charted its full history. Janet also covered the war in Iraq for Rolling Stone and has reported on a wide range of other topics, including the failure of the U.S. and international recovery efforts in post-earthquake Haiti, the Duke lacrosse scandal, and the death of American aid worker Marla Rzutsky in Baghdad and the national childhood obesity crisis. She's also reported extensively in Africa, profiling Zimbabwean leader Robert Mugabe and covering conflicts in Sudan and Sierra Leone. In addition to Rolling Stone, Janet's work has appeared in GQ, Men's Quarterly, the Los Angeles Times, Sunday Magazine, and Salon. She lives in Brooklyn, New York, and she has a French sheepdog named Bodie. Welcome to the show, Janet. How are you today?
My dog is a plug. That's excellent. Thank you.
You're quite welcome. Glad to have you on the show. Glad to have you because you are a thought leader and really put a lot of work into your book on Scientology. So thank you for doing this and really exposing it. For many of my listeners, Scientology, you know, it's among the world's newest religions, and so we don't understand a lot about what's going on here. Certainly, we don't know about as much about Scientology as we do about Catholicism or Judaism. So give us a history of Scientology from its founder, L. Ron Hubbard, to its current leadership of David Miscavige. How do you pronounce his name?
Miscavige.
Miscavige. So give us the history there, please.
This could take me days. It's a very complicated religion, but Scientology was founded in 1954, having grown out of something called Dianetics, which was essentially a self-help set of self-help techniques that was created by L. Ron Hubbard, who was a science fiction writer.
Mm-hmm.
And Hubbard had dubbed Dianetics what he called a mental science, and the idea was that everybody had very deep traumas that were the cause of a lot of their current day crises or problems, and that if you could figure out a way to erase those traumas, you would, you know, be a better, a more well individual. And he came up with a technique of counseling that he called auditing. And this evolved over the next several years into something a bit more spiritual, because people that were doing this auditing were having past life experiences, apparently. So they began to realize that they had lived many lives, that they, you know, the problems they had maybe extended way back to something before their current life. And so it evolved into something called Scientology, which Hubbard basically dubbed a spiritual science. And Scientology quickly became, at least in the eyes of Scientologists, or in the eyes of L. Ron Hubbard, it became a church. It did not really become an official church in the United States until the 1990s, when it was given the full protection of the United States government. It was given a tax-free status. It's an official 501c3 organization. But until that point, they claimed to be a religion for many, many years, for decades, and it did not pay taxes, despite the fact that it was not recognized as an official religion. And it sort of existed in our country, morphing almost every sort of decade to fit the times in a way so that it would gain members. So in the 50s, it presented itself through the counseling, this auditing, as a sort of alternative to psychotherapy, which was really helpful because it was the Cold War, there was a lot of anxiety, and there were not very many therapists in the United States. So this was a low-cost, non-professional quote-unquote professional form of therapy, and people took to it. And in the 60s, it kind of rebranded as more of a spiritual movement. And that appealed to you know, flower children and seekers of all sorts in that era. And then in the 70s, it became more of a traditional self-help group. It attached itself to the idea of recovery, you know, recovery from drugs, recovery from, you know, whatever you might have gone through in the 60s. And then by the 80s and 90s, it had evolved again into something that was more professionally driven. Like if you were, a business person and you wanted to become more effective to increase your sales, like it had some of their techniques and courses could help you do that, and they were pushing that aspect of themselves. And so they've, you know, yet their essential beliefs are that you are an eternal being, that you... you must ascend a sort of what they call the bridge to total freedom, which is, you know, sort of a number of levels all the way up to the very top where you'll become incredibly enlightened. And you have to pay for each one of those stages. So, you know, that's kind of the story of Scientology. And today they're having, I think, a somewhat of a difficult time figuring out how to sell themselves to people, because you can find out a lot about them on the internet, and they're an organization that's been steeped in scandal for many, many, many years, for many, many different reasons.
Yeah, without a doubt. My guest is Janet Reitman. We're talking about Scientology, and let's go back to the foundings, if we can, with L. Ron Hubbard, the science fiction writer turned religious figure, if you will. Is L. Ron Hubbard a pitiable character, in your opinion, Janet?
Pitiable? I don't pity him. I think that he was a rather brilliant person, very, very... eccentric,
to say the least.
He had a unique genius. He was able to figure out what it was that appealed to people, and package it in a way that and do it repeatedly, and you know that he could keep something that was a relatively, you know, not. I mean, Scientology was never gigantic. It was never a huge, huge thing. And yet he was able to continue to package it and repackage it in a way that it was attractive to people. Scientology has never, to my knowledge, or based on my reporting, ever had the number of members that it has claimed to have. But it's remained viable largely because of L. Ron Hubbard's ability to kind of cast it and recast it in all kinds of ways to people.
All right, Janet. Well, then help me to understand, or help my listeners to better understand. Let's do some compare and contrast. Compare L. Ron Hubbard as the leader of a religious movement to, say, Joseph Smith, who was the founder of the Mormons.
I mean, he was like he is the Scientologist Joseph Smith. He's very similar. I think, you know, I'm not a religious expert, I must just say right here. I'm an investigative reporter, but, you know, from my reading of Joseph Smith, there were lots of similarities. I mean, Joseph Smith, as well, was an incredibly creative, iconoclastic young man who came up with something, made some outlandish claims. What struck many people as outlandish claims, but inspired other people, and they truly believed that he was, you know, a prophet, and after his death, his successor Brigham Young helped turn the Latter-day Saints into what is truly a major world religion. L. Ron Hubbard, similarly, you know, he was a man who had some pretty astounding claims. He was derided by the establishment, but other people really took to him and looked at him as a prophet and a guru. His successor, David Miscavige, is the Brigham Young of Scientology, but David Miscavige is not, in my opinion, David Miscavige is not building Scientology into the major world religion that Brigham Young, you know, and his successors did, despite the fact that Miscavige claims, the Church of Scientology claims to be huge and growing and expanding, and indeed they have, you know, purchased buildings all over the world, and on the surface they may look like they are. They have a very big web presence. They have a great website, very, very sort of flashy, lots of videos, multimedia stuff, and, you know, but in truth, when you look at their actual numbers, you know, and when you talk to people who are leaving Scientology and why they're leaving Scientology, it just doesn't seem to me that it's something that's growing in that same way. But the Scientologists that I've interviewed Scientology officials have always brought up the Mormons as an example, a religion that was vilified in the United States until it was finally accepted.
All right.
They definitely look to the Mormons as inspiration.
That's their role model. My guest is Janet Reitman, author of the book Inside Scientology, The Story of America's Most Secretive Religion. And Janet, without a doubt, Tom Cruise is perhaps the most public figure in Scientology. What is Tom Cruise's attraction to the religion? Why is he the spokesperson for Scientology in so many people's minds?
Well, Tom Cruise is the product. Tom Cruise, Scientologist, is the product of a lengthy campaign to turn him into this spokesperson. And I should just say for a moment that he does not seem to be the big spokesperson any longer. There is really no big celebrity spokesperson. They've sort of taken a step back from that. But when Tom Cruise was the big spokesperson in the mid-2000s, that was the result of a strategy that had been put in place in the late 80s when Cruise, right after Cruise joined, to turn him into somebody who would promote the Church of Scientology better than anybody else had ever done. And over the next, 10 or 15 years, he was nurtured by David Miscavige personally. He became a close friend of Tom Cruise's. They catered to everything Cruise's every whim, and Cruise, in turn, ultimately became this incredibly passionate spokesperson for the church. Where he would go out and you saw him go out and make these avowals of his faith that to Scientologists were amazing. They thought that Cruise's performances, on Oprah or wherever, were wonderful. They did not understand how it was being perceived in the public, but this was a real strategy to develop Tom Cruise in that way.
All right. Now, Tom Cruise actively stayed with the Church of Scientology, doesn't have the prominent role, as you mentioned, that he once had. But staying with the church, that isn't always the case. There have been defectors that have left the faith. How does Scientology deal with the defectors? And in particular, tell us the story about Tanya and Stephen Castle.
Tanya and Stephen Castle were a couple who were second-generation Scientologists. They grew up in Scientology. And when they were teens, they joined the management of the church, which is called the SEA organization, like S-E-A organization. And they went to work for the church's for the church's senior management in the desert in California, where they have a base. And this is where David Miscavige actually, is based. And Tanya became Miscavige's secretary, one of his secretaries, and Stefan was involved in event promotion. And at some point in the late 1990s, these were very dedicated young people. Extremely, they just thought they were going to, and they got married, and they thought they were going to spend their entire lives in the church. And at some point around the year 2000, Stefan fell out of favor with David Miscavige, who is, by every account, an erratic person, and people fall out of favor with him all the time. And Stefan fell out of favor with him and was dispatched off the base and put into a rehabilitation program, which has often been described as almost like a penal colony. People do it voluntarily, but it is a program of hard, physical labor, intense study, and a kind of re-education. And designed for people who work for the church management, and it can be very punishing, and people can be on these programs for years. And Stefan was on this program for a number of years. During that period, they pressured him and Tanya to divorce one another, and they didn't want to. And Tanya, in particular, was working for David Miscavige, and everybody around her was, all these women that were working with her were putting a tremendous amount of pressure on her to divorce her husband. And she finally, exhaustedly did it, but retained this love for him in her heart, and as he retained love for her. And what happened was Stefan ultimately finished this rehabilitation program and then left the church altogether. And when he did, he reunited with some friends who had also left the church, who helped him cook up a plan to rescue his wife. And through a very complicated, wonderful story, they managed to get a cell phone to his wife on the base, and they began this very furtive dialogue through text messaging and voice messaging and all kinds of little ways of communication. And they ultimately came up with a plan for her to jump over a wall at this base and escape, which she did. And it was about a five-year situation of their being separated, pressure to divorce, ultimately after many years divorcing and then reuniting and then finally coming, you know, being reunited physically in California. So,
I mean, you can't write this stuff. Truth is definitely stranger than fiction.
This is one of the only stories that I heard that to this day they haven't told anybody else. They told me the story and I couldn't believe it. And then I heard other people tell me their story. It's an amazing, amazing. Giving you 5 minutes like this doesn't do it justice. It's an incredible story.
No, it doesn't. My guest is Janet Reitman, author of the book Inside Scientology, The Story of America's Most Secret Religion. Janet, if people want to learn more about you, learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go on the internet?
They can go to my website, which is just it's www.janetreitman.com.
Spell that for people because it is a little unusual.
Yeah. It's JanetReitman.
JanetReitman.com. Janet.
They can buy a book, everything.
And they can buy a book at all the local places, every place that you buy books. Janet, thank you so much for being my special guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.